Meditation Instructions by Venerable Urjyotikar.
Welcome everybody. This is going to be our last meditation class, commentary on meditation. But is also very important. Next Saturday, I would like to have a meeting with those who are coming to the retreat. So I expect all those who enrolled, I don't know a better word, to come to the retreat to attend that meeting too. And that is very important. When I do something, I like preparing. Very well prepared. Preparation very much. And this is very important actually, to be prepared in every way, whatever you do, to be prepared is very important. Bodily, mentally, both preparation is very important. Whatever you want to do, if you feel and you prepare for it, and if you're ready for it, if you have psychologically prepared for it, the rest happens so naturally. We don't have to struggle so much. If you're prepared very well, things happen so naturally. So I really look forward to this retreat, and I hope that you will really enjoy it. You will experience calmness, peacefulness, clarity, joy. Clarity means also seeing things very clearly. But prepare for it. Even from now, I've been telling you since the first class to be prepared. So, and this meeting next Saturday is also a preparation. We will have a meeting and also a discussion and basic instructions again. But this is for those who are coming for the retreat only. So I continue talking about some of the things that I have not discussed last week. So going back to some of those insights again, you see in your meditation, you come to a point where you see that this arising and passing away is so tiring that you don't want to be with it anymore. You want to be away from it. You want to get out of it. You want to escape from it, which is called Mongchitu Kamyata Jnana. Mongchitu Kamyata means wanting to escape. And sometimes you think that if I stop meditating, if I don't just watch these things arising and passing away, I would feel even more peaceful. And when you do that, you do feel more peaceful. Because the concentration, the equanimity, the detachment is so great that even though you stop meditating, you feel very peaceful, and you can experience this peace. Oh, this is so peaceful, peaceful, peaceful. And you can enjoy that. But doing that is not the right thing to do. Meditation is very enjoyable, but if you just enjoy it, you lose it. So there's something like catch-22. So you see that just stopping to meditate, it's not real escape, because you are still in arising and passing away. You are still in the process. And after a while, even you lose your clarity and you feel your mind becoming painful and agitated again. You see, you understand that, oh no, I don't want to experience that agitation anymore. Agitation is so painful. Distraction is so painful. This calmness, quietness, peacefulness is so much better. So you come back to meditation. You pay attention to any sensation in the body, any kind of feeling, any kind of thought, any kind of emotion. But mostly here, there are very subtle emotions only. And this wanting to escape is also sometimes like an emotion, like an emotion. You feel like trapped in the process. So you want to get out of it. Get me out of it, get me out of it. So this is like an emotion. Sometimes it causes you some slight agitation also. You get agitated. you can get out of it. But you understand that there is no other way to escape. The only way to overcome or escape is to watch it even more closely. So people are looking for escape in many situations in our life also. Take this into your life. Take the context of life. You have difficulties in life, frustrations in life, and you try to escape. And many people try to escape in such horrible way. Many people do that because they want to escape. So that I will discuss about that later again. So one thing to escape is okay, but what is the right thing to do to escape? The right thing to escape is to watch it even more closely, to understand it even more thoroughly. No matter what, even in your life, any kind of situation which is painful, if you want to escape, or if you want to overcome that painful situation, the best way to escape is to pay more attention, to study it more thoroughly, to understand it in every detail, completely. So, complete understanding is the only way to overcome. There's no other way better than that. No matter what the situation is, meditation or other worldly situation. So this is the right attitude. Once you get in meditation, once you get to this point and understand that the only way to overcome any painful situation is to pay more attention to it, to understand it even more deeply, more completely, more thoroughly. Then after that, even in your life, when you face a situation, you don't try to run away. You don't try to turn away. You don't shut your eyes. You even look at it more closely. What is happening now? I want to understand it even more deeply. So the insight that you get in your meditation is applicable even in your daily life, in your worldly problems also. You develop the right attitude to live the whole of your life, not only in meditation. In the whole life, this is the right attitude. And after paying even more attention, willingly, and this is very important because you are willing to see it again. You are willing to look at it again. Willingly looking at it, because you pay so close attention that there's no other desire anymore. No agitation anymore. You don't even want to escape from it anymore. Because you are paying so close attention. See this point very clearly? You pay so complete attention that there's no other desire anymore. Just paying attention. And that complete attention makes the mind become very balanced. There's no dividedness in the mind. There's no split in the mind. Before that, you meditate and then you want to escape. Oh, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to see it anymore. What shall I do now? Shall I stop meditating? So your mind is not really whole. You're not paying whole attention. But at this point, when you come to this equanimity state, you pay complete attention. No matter what happens, even if I die in this process, it's okay. No other, you don't want to do anything else. You just want to pay complete attention. And then the meditation becomes really mature. It's the culmination of meditation. Nothing else I want to do. No matter what happens, even if I die in this process, I'm willing to look at this process, look at it and look at it, look at it. That sort of wholehearted attention. And that makes the mind really settle down. So even in your life situation, if you decide that, well, this situation is very difficult now, very painful, but I will really pay all my attention, I'll really look at it. The moment you decide that, you'll find that you calm down. You're not so agitated anymore. That decision is very important. So, you're willingly paying complete attention and your mind calms down. You become more and more balanced, no extreme, no attachment. Before that, your mind calms down and you feel so happy, you feel so much joy that sometimes you get agitated and you get attached to that happiness and joy, calmness and peacefulness. But now, peacefulness becomes even greater, but you are not even attached to that peacefulness. Your equanimity, your balance is so great. It's very peaceful, but no attachment to even peacefulness. There's no desire to escape even. It's very, sometimes it sounds very paradoxical. When you are willing to look at it, then everything comes into balance. Then you pay more and more attention, things become more and more clear, more and more clear. The mind becomes stronger and stronger, mindfulness becomes stronger and stronger, and every noticing becomes so sharp that with every noticing, without any thought at all, you see very clearly the nature of it, either impermanence or unsatisfactoriness or no being, no ego, no self, no lasting essence, no control. You can see either of these aspects very, very clearly with every noticing, no thinking. So it's so amazing that, you know, in a very short moment, one noticing is very, very short. In that moment, this wisdom, clarity, can be so clear without thought. So all of our life, when we understand something, we understand it with a thinking process. We think about it and understand it. But this moment, we have no thought at all, but every noticing brings so much wisdom, so much clarity. And because there is no thought, because whenever you think, your mind is divided. Only when you have stopped thinking, then your mind is whole. So when you stop thinking and paying more and more attention, every noticing becomes very clear, very clear, very clear, very clear like that. And for the last 3 moments, very, very powerful, sharp clarity, and then let go. The mind is ready to let go. And at that moment, you are not experiencing or seeing any bodily or mental process anymore. Your mind is going, plunging into cessation. So at that moment, everything comes to a stop. And deep peacefulness and calmness, very short duration, and you come out of it again, and a few moments of very deep calmness, peacefulness still goes on, maybe 3 or 4 mental states, and then some thoughts come again, and you can think about it, something happened, very powerful. Very calm and very peaceful. And from that experience, you understand the nature of it very clearly. That this is real peacefulness. This is real freedom. Real calmness. And then you reflect about yourself again. Something has changed. You mean if you have not read any books, if you have no knowledge about it, still when you think about yourself, you know that something has changed. It changed your personality. It changed your perspective. You know that there's nothing that lasts. There's no ego. There's no self. And naturally, your, how do you say that? Morality or keeping the precept becomes natural for you. You don't try to restrain yourself from breaking the precept. You know that you'll never break the precept. It becomes natural. And you know that you have no doubt about self or future life, no doubt about Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, and more often, those who have no knowledge even, spontaneously they feel great gratitude, very deep and powerful gratitude for the Buddha, his teaching, also for the Sangha, who keeps this teaching alive. Tremendous gratitude. One person discussed with me too. He said, so much gratitude that he cried. Tears of joy, not because of sadness, so much gratitude. this teaching is so true. This is true freedom. So many thoughts can come, and in the text, so many. I don't have so much time to explain, but these are the main. So you have eradicated, if you have reached to that stage, you have eradicated ditthi, mistha ditthi, believing in self, permanent ego. It's eradicated. There's no such thing as permanent ego, permanent self. Everything is in a flux, in a change. Ditthi visikesa, whether I'll be born or I'll be reborn or not, or this or that, all the visikesa are gone. Doubts gone. And believing in other kind of practices which does not have these eightfold noble characters, noble path characters. Believing in any kind of samatha even. Some people believe that if you practice samatha, you get absorbed into some state, and that is freedom, that is liberation, that is nirvana. But when you have experienced this, you can understand that there is no other way to be liberated. The only way to become liberated is to wash this bodily and mental process through and through. There's no other way for liberation. And to be able to wash this bodily and mental process, you need to purify your conduct. Keep your sila very pure. And you need to concentrate your mind on some object, which is the body and mind, or any other object as a foundation, like breath or whatever. Calm down your mind, make it become very clear, pure. So purification of mind, purification of thought, any way you want to like, you want to understand it. And also, just by watching this body and mental process, you purify yourself more and more. Purification of views, purification of whether this is a path or not. So by purifying, you become liberated. There's no other way. So if we want to be free, we want to purify ourselves. So you understand that this is the only way to liberation. So ditthi visikilabda paramanda, aisa machariya, aisa means jealousy or envy. You have overcome that too. Which means that you are willing to share whatever you have with others. And you are not envious also. If you have something extra and somebody else needs it, you can willingly give it away. If you really need it, take it. You're very happy to give it away. But that doesn't mean that you will give away everything you have. If somebody really needs it badly, you are willing to share that with that person. And when somebody is doing well, happy, you are not jealous. I don't know exactly the word jealous and envy, its exact meaning, but what it means is that these days especially, and always I think, when somebody else is doing well and you are not, how do you feel? You don't feel happy. Oh, if I were in that place, if I get that instead of he or she getting that. You think it that way, but when you have become enlightened, you never think like that. Oh, how fortunate that person is. He's enjoying all those good things in life. Very happy for that person. So this sympathetic joy also becomes very natural. So envy or jealousy or covetousness or many words, I'm not really sure of the meaning. But this is the way the person feels. So most of us, once more or less, before we become enlightened, so to speak, feels unhappy about others doing better than us. More or less we feel that. What an ugly state of mind. And what do we get from that? We cannot love that person. We cannot appreciate that person. Why do people feel so lonely? Because of envy, jealousy, because of covetousness. We feel so lonely. Enmity also, so much enmity in the world, so much danger in the world. Why? Because somebody else have got that, and I don't have it. I want it, I'll get it, unlawfully. So a lot of people are doing that. But some people are so clever. They can twist the whole thing and make it look very beautiful. So this mind is very trickery, very deceitful. But once you see it so clearly, you cannot do that anymore. No deceit, no trick anymore. You become very honest. Whatever you feel, you can see it so clearly. But you may still feel desire for some things, because the first state of enlightenment does not eradicate all the desire, all the greed. Only there is still greed, but this greed is not strong enough to break your precepts. You will not do anything to get something and kill somebody or some being. You will not do that. You will not steal. You will not tell a lie. You will not commit any adultery, misconduct of sex, no intoxicants, no desire even for that. You are not controlling yourself. You just don't want to do it. That's it. So simple, easy. It becomes so easy and natural that you, no effort, you don't need any effort to control yourself. Oh, I want to do that, but no, I'm not going to do that. There's no struggle like that. It's so natural. You're not going to do that. You don't want to do that. So, before enlightenment, we know that it's not good to break 5 precepts. So we try hard to keep it. Sometimes the temptation is so great that we struggle and struggle. Get very tired. Sometimes we give in. And then regret again. Oh no, I've done the same again now. And take the precept again. So one of my friends said, why do you take 5 precepts every day? You break it every day? If you don't break it every day, why taking it every day? Just take it once and finish. So anyway, after that, it becomes natural. There's no desire to break precepts. So, no asamicharya, no envy, no jealousy, no covetousness. You see how free you can feel. Even though you have desire to enjoy good food or good other sensual pleasure, because you have no covetousness, no envy, no jealousy, you are so free. And even when you enjoy those desires, it's not the same anymore. Before that, we think that this is real happiness, this is real pleasure, this is real joy. But after that, even though you can let yourself enjoy sense pleasures, still you know that this is not the real thing. So you do not get caught in that. Even though you enjoy, still you are some way free. Free to enjoy that. And especially when something unfortunate happens in your life, you feel very unhappy, you go and meditate, you can see that this is just another state. This is just another mental state. You can become free very easily again. So, nitya sanya, nitya citta, nitya ditti. Before meditation, we think that things last. We think that things are good, pleasurable, and they can bring us happiness. And we think that we really believe in permanence, permanent person, permanent ego. But after that, this nitya ditti is gone. But nitya sanya, nitya citta still lingers. Sometimes it feels like the same. But when you really look at it very closely, you know that, no. So it's like you are living on the borderline all the time. When you are willing, you can see that, no. So when you feel happiness, when you enjoy sensual pleasures, the experience seems the same, but when you really look at it, you know that, no. This will never really bring happiness. No real happiness there. Although sometimes you enjoy it, you can let go of it also easily. Because you know that there's no real lasting happiness there. So one of my friends said, after you become enlightened, then you enjoy sensual pleasure. It's great. Because you don't get so caught in it. So very difficult to talk about it. It's very difficult. Maybe next time I'll try to talk about it more clearly. But this is the way it feels. That's why we can see some people enjoying sense pleasure, even though they are enlightened. but they are not caught in it. So it's the same with anicca, dukkha, anatta. There's no atta ditti anymore. But the person behaves the same way, like a person. You will say, I, you, use the same language. But always knowing that there's no such thing as real lasting ego. So this is the difference, very, very deep. But this will be eradicated in the last stage of enlightenment, fourth stage of enlightenment. So you become very free. Sometimes you will laugh, sometimes you will cry, but you are not caught in it. You can overcome it very easily. Sometimes even crying feels good. Is that possible? Well, anyway, when you come across that, you will understand it. Very hard to talk about these things. So you have eradicated all these. Deti, Uchikesa, Silabda, Paramata, Issa, Vacharya. You don't want anything from another person unlawfully. If you have something extra, you want to share that with another person too. Very generous. But no wasting. You don't go and throw away everything you have on the street. No. If you know that somebody really needs it, you will give it. And the second stage of enlightenment... Oh, sorry, wait. I have to talk about another thing. And this reflection goes on for a long time, again and again. Reflecting on your sila sometimes. I cannot break any sila anymore. I don't want to break it. You're reflecting on what these impurities you have eradicated. You can see them. There's no ditti visikesa, there's no silabdha paramasa, there's no isamicharya. You can see that. But you can also see what's left. You can also see that I can still enjoy. I still have the craving for sense pleasure. I can still get upset. But even though you have craving, you will not break any precept. Even though you get angry, you will not go and kill. So your anger or your craving is not strong enough to harm another being or even yourself. And Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, the more you reflect on that, the more you feel gratitude. So very hard to explain the feeling. So here it is mentioned that sometimes people reflect on only one aspect. So not necessarily all. Some people reflect on only one aspect of the experience only. Like the moment when the mind becomes free. Or the nature of that freedom. It is so free. There's no rising, there's no passing away. There's total silence, there's total quietness. So this is like thinking about Nibbana again. That moment, the person has experienced Nibbana. And what is Nibbana? How do you talk about it? There's no arising, there's no passing away. There's no mental process, there's no physical process. I mean, you are not experiencing any mental process. You are not experiencing any physical process. You are not even thinking, oh, this is so peaceful. Because at that moment, you cannot think about anything. The mind becomes very quiet and peaceful and experience that peacefulness without even thinking about it. Only later you can think about it. So what is the nature of Nibbana? Is it non-existent? It is not non-existent. It is not nothingness. Because if it were nothingness, then anybody can experience Nibbana any moment. Just think of nothingness and feel free. You cannot do that. Because when you think of nothingness, there's a thinking there. But when you are experiencing Nibbana, there's no thinking at all. No thinking even of Nibbana at all. So what is the nature of Nibbana? In most texts, the simile is a flame which has gone out. A flame burning. And when it went out, what is left? Not nothingness. Or another example, well, I'll make a sound. You pay close attention. Now there's no sound anymore. What is there? It's quietness. And is quietness real or not? How do you understand that? Can you experience quietness? Yes, it's so quiet. So very similar to quietness or the flame that went out. There's no burning anymore. So to understand silence or to understand the nature of the flame that has gone out, first you have to pay attention to what was happening. To understand silence, first you pay attention to sound. So that is the process. To understand what happened when the flame went out, first you pay attention to the flame. So there is a process that leads to this state. So it's not just an idea of nothingness. It's the idea of the process, that it's the nature of the process that has come to an end. The end of process, which is real peace. Because whenever when something is happening, arising and passing away, there's no quietness, there's no peace. So once you have experienced that, even though sometimes you are not experiencing it, you can get caught in other worldly things, excitements. Whenever you pay attention, you know that this is not the real thing. This is not the real happiness. You can always go back to that very quiet and peaceful state. So, after you experience that, you meditate again and determination. You make a determination. I'll meditate and I'll go back to that quietness, to that peaceful state, to that state where all the process stops. And you can determine 5 minutes or 10 minutes like that. So meditate again with the determination that I'm going to experience that quietness and peacefulness again for 5 minutes. And forget about that. While you are meditating, don't think of anything anymore. Just pay attention to whatever is happening in the body, in the mind. Whatever you are used to doing it. It doesn't matter what. Any object, any sensation can be the object of meditation. So pay attention to whatever object you are used to that comes naturally and easily to you. Watch it and watch it and watch it. It becomes clearer and clearer, clearer, very fast, and stop again. You can get into that very quiet, peaceful state again. And stay there for about the duration, the time duration that you have determined. And this determination is important. If you have determined, then by practicing it, you can stay there for completely 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and you can practice that and extend that longer and longer, half an hour, 2 hours, the whole day. So you need to do practice to get into that state and stay in that state. If you don't practice regularly, sometimes you might find it very hard to go there again. And even though you practice and go into that state, if you don't determine how long you will stay there, your mind will come out again and again. Get in and come out, get in and come out, get in and come out. It can happen like that all the time. But if you want to stay there for a long time, you have to make a determination. So you meditate and then you determine that I'll get into that state again for 5 minutes. But if any danger should happen, I'll come out of it. So this is a kind of suggestion also. So when you are deep inside there, if any danger happens, spontaneously you'll come out of it and deal with the situation. But if you don't determine like that, you might not be able to come out of it. So there, in the text, there are many detailed instructions given. This is what you should do. This is what you should do. So the right way to determine, the right way to meditate, and put the requirements also, when you want to come out of it, Sometimes you have to determine, if my teacher calls me, I'll wake up. So any kind of determination, necessarily, if you need to do, you have to do that. And then keep it, practicing it. Even an arhat sometimes find it very difficult to get into that state, if he has anything to worry about. So there's a story about two monks, one a very old teacher, one a very young monk. Both had attained enlightenment. They went to a monastery, and the teacher, because of his seniority, he got a very nice place to stay. And the younger monk, because he's younger, naturally, you get the best place goes to the most senior monk, and the worst place goes to the most junior monk. So the most junior monk got a place which is not very good, which was not very good. But he was very content with the place he got. He was very happy. No choice, no preference. So he lived in his place and meditated, and he enjoyed this calmness and peacefulness and quietness for the whole duration of 3 months, rain retreat. But the teacher, he was thinking, oh, my little monk, his place is not very good. Maybe he's not feeling very comfortable. Because of that worry, the teacher couldn't get into that state. So this is just an example to show that. So when you want to meditate, first you must reflect that nothing is important. Let go. That's why I express and emphasize this point again and again in many different ways. When you meditate, you must think that nothing is really important. So psychologically, you distance yourself. Even when you're meditating, not only in that kind of absorbed state, even when you sit for an hour, tell yourself, nothing is really important. I don't need to worry about anything at all. No worry about job, no worry about home for 1 hour. It won't hurt anybody. Just let go of everybody for 1 hour. So when you go for the retreat, this is what I want you to do. Just let go of everything for 9 days. Nothing can really happen seriously. Nothing is important. We have done that for innumerable lifetimes. Why so important? Why can't we just let go for these things for 9 days or 10 days? So this is what I want to discuss next week. Really to prepare your mind. Am I really ready for it? Can I really let go? So every sitting, if you can do that, you'll find that your sitting becomes very easy and natural. You don't get distracted so easily. So make determination. Nothing is that important. We have been doing the same thing for how many years? For how many lifetimes? Why do we think this is so important? And we will be doing the same thing. Don't know how many more lifetimes. So this kind of determination and preparing the mind and distancing the mind is very important. But if anything serious should happen, well, I will deal with it. Sometimes, you know, people think about something so insignificant and keep themselves worried and worried and worried all the time. Something so insignificant. And when you talk about it, it's so laughable. Some people worry about things so insignificant. So, back to meditation, get into absorption. Back to meditation, get into absorption again and again. And if you want to develop deeper state of enlightenment, when you sit and meditate, you should determine that I am not going to get absorbed into that state which I had already for a certain amount of time, for a day, for 2 days, for 10 days. You have to determine that again. This determination is very important. So if a person is meditating with the intention to experience the next stage of enlightenment, he should say that, I'm not going to get absorbed into that state, but I'm going to meditate for the purpose of the next stage of enlightenment. And when you say, I'm not going to get into that absorption state, you have to put a time limit. How many hours, how many days, time limit. Because if you don't do that, you just sit and meditate and you get absorbed into the same state again. And if you get absorbed into the same state, you cannot get to the next stage. So that's why determination is very important. You know, even Buddha taught monks to make a determination before going to sleep even. When you go to sleep, you tell yourself that, now I'm going to meditate and relax and let go of everything. And sleeping also is a kind of letting go. Have you thought about it? Falling asleep is a kind of letting go. You don't hear anything anymore, you don't see anything anymore. You don't feel anything anymore, you don't know what's going around you anymore. If you really think about it, it's really scary. You've lost in touch with the world. So this is a kind of letting go. Actually, we are doing that all the time. And those people who cannot go to sleep, I think one reason is that they cannot let go. They want to keep control over their body, over their surrounding. They don't feel safe and secure. So whenever you don't feel safe and secure in a place, you can't go to sleep. So Buddha said, when a monk wants to go to sleep, he should meditate, relax, let go, and determine that I'll wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And if you do that regularly, you'll find that exactly at 4 o'clock in the morning, you wake up. You set your alarm. Before your alarm goes on, you are awake. And you look at the clock. It's just the right time. So mostly you wake up before the alarm. I keep my alarm on all the time, but always I wake up before the alarm. Get the habit of it. Just in case, I keep the alarm on. And also, you can make determination. The moment I wake up in the morning, I'll be aware of it. I'll be mindful. I'll not be dreaming anymore. I'll not be thinking anything. Just very clear, awake mental state. Mindful. Which means, the moment you wake up, your meditation is there. You're meditating from the moment you wake up. You can determine that. If it doesn't happen today, keep doing that, keep determining, and it will happen. And you'll feel very happy about it. The moment you wake up, you're mindful. You're not thinking about anything. The mind is very clear and awake. No drowsiness anymore. So most people, they wake up and they still feel sleepy and sleepy and sleepy. This is not a good way to wake up. So determination is very important. If you determine like that wholeheartedly, your mind obeys that. So this is the way we need to train ourselves to get positive results. We can do that. In many ways, we can train our mind to get positive results. So this is just as an additional knowledge for you. So the person meditates again and determine that for a certain amount of time, I'm not going to get absorbed in that first enlightenment absorption. But I intend to go further to get to second stage of enlightenment, meditate. But if you cannot get to that state for that time period, it's okay. You can still get absorbed into the absorption state which you already achieved. And for a few hours or for a few days, you can do that again. And then after that, go back practicing. Why do you need to enjoy that? Why do people enjoy that? I don't know, it's so natural. Because it's so peaceful. Paying attention to all these things, although it is useful, it's a kind of burden. So let go of everything and go into this quiet, peaceful space. It's very restful. So, kilese tu suisu deti vichikesa patama jnana wizza. So, among the kilesas, deti and vichikesa, doubt and wrong view, patama jnana wajja means eradicated by the first enlightenment. Doso tatiya jnana wajjo, anger, is eradicated by third state of enlightenment. Second state of enlightenment doesn't eradicate anything, only weakens whatever is left, make them weaker. And if you notice that in the third stage of enlightenment, only existence is still there. No sense pleasure, no desire for sense pleasure, but still desire for very peaceful, very pure, very blissful existence. Still there. That's why we don't consider that the third stage of enlightenment eradicates all craving. Because this is also a kind of craving. See how subtle it could be. So this last craving, desire for this peaceful, pure, blissful state of life is eradicated by the fourth enlightenment. Because there's still some sort of desire, it shows us there's still some sort of delusion there. Some kind of delusion is still there. With any kind of desire, no matter how small, there's delusion. So that's why total delusion, delusion is eradicated totally only by the fourth stage of enlightenment. But even from the first stage of enlightenment, certain aspect of delusion is eradicated. Only very subtle delusion is left. So that's why in the first stage of enlightenment, total lobha, even lobha for this peaceful, blissful, pure state of life, even lobha for that is eradicated in the fourth. And moha, which means delusion, or avijja, which means ignorance, is totally eradicated by the fourth stage of enlightenment. Mana, what does that mean? Not comparing with another person, not being proud, not being conceited, but being because of our achievement, sometimes we feel very pleased about that. Oh, I've achieved that. That's a kind of mana also. Not comparing with another person, but just being very pleased about what you have done. Even that is eradicated in the fourth stage of enlightenment. Just imagine how that person can be, how free that mind state can be. Totally free. So that's why mana, totally eradicated in the fourth stage of enlightenment. Tina, tina medra, drowsiness, totally eradicated by the fourth only. So that means before that state, that person can still feel drowsy. So that means an arhan who has attained the fourth stage of enlightenment does not feel drowsy. He can stay awake a long, long time, many days even if he want to. But if he wants to sleep, now I'm going to sleep off. That sort of sleep. Amazing. If he can do it, how wonderful that would be. So that is eradicated. Odisha means agitation of the mind. So even after the third stage of enlightenment, the mind can still get agitated. But after the fourth stage of enlightenment, no agitation anymore. Total calmness and total mindfulness. So even after the third stage of enlightenment, that person is not 100% mindful. So the 100% complete mindfulness happens after the fourth stage of enlightenment. And ahirika, anotapa, shamelessness and fearlessness, which after third stage of enlightenment, because there still is some mana, some sort of pride, because there still is some sort of greed, according to the Abhidharma, it means that that person still is not ashamed of that. Still taking pride in one's achievement. So this word shame is not the same as normally what people mean in the daily life. So when you meditate, you can understand that. When something happens in your mind, you can see that it's unwholesome, you feel shame of that. Not because somebody else found that out. You know that, no, this is not beautiful. So mostly we don't see that, we don't experience that. But only after the fourth stage of enlightenment, this person overcome all these things. So still we are very shameless. And Mecha Deti Musawada Mecha Kamanda, the Mecha Deti wrong view, Musavada means lying. Michcha kamanda means doing something which is harmful, like killing or stealing. Michcha ajiva means wrong livelihood. Ime patamanyana vajja. First stage of enlightenment eradicated all that. Wonderful. And michcha sankappa, pisuna vacha. Michcha sankappa means wrong thinking. Thinking that, hard to give an example. Pisuna vacha means making people fight. How do you say that? Slandering, yes. And prusavacha, harsh words, using very strong words, harsh words. Ime tatiyanyana vacha, the third stage of enlightenment, where it is that. And eradicate means the intention to do that is eradicated. Not just restraining. Mostly we restrain not to say anything like that. I do restrain not to make people fight. But this is when the third stage of enlightenment, it means that there's no intention even to do that. And the fourth stage of enlightenment, sampapalapa, frivolous talk, and mecha vayama, mecha dadi, sati, mecha samadhi, mecha vimuti, mecha jnana, which means sometimes we remember things in the past. Oh, I've done that, I've done this, I've enjoyed that, I've enjoyed this. Even that sort of recalling is gone. We don't think about the past anymore. Only what we find useful, like you have learned Dharma, you think about it. Wow, Buddha said that. That's samasati also, a kind of samasati. But even after the third stage of enlightenment, this person still wants to think about what happened before. Not about Dharma, about something else. So anything beyond Dharma, if we think about it, is some kind of useless thinking, useless remembering. Michcha samadhi also, the mind gets absorbed in any kind of thing. Any object, anything, you can get absorbed in reading a book even. And that also is gone. The mind does not get absorbed in anything useless. Michcha vimuti, sometimes people experience blissful state in the meditation, but which is not really a liberated state, but they believe that this is a liberated state. This is michcha vimuti. And when a person has become really liberated, he knows that those are gone. Those are not true liberation. Now michcha jnana means people are very clever in doing something terrible. They can plan for it so well. Very cleverly, very intelligently in some ways. And you can think of those examples. People can plan for those things using a lot of intelligence. And that is called michcha jnana, wrong wisdom or wrong intelligence. That also is eradicated by the fourth, satutta jnana vijjani. So it goes and goes on and on like that. What is eradicated in which state? Many, many. So I don't think we have that much time for that. And also, it's very interesting to know all these things. But my emphasis is just to the first stage of enlightenment. Because that's what we can expect. Beyond that is very difficult. So although it's very interesting, I emphasize more on just the first stage. But most teachers said, don't stop there, go on, keep going. But I know very few people keep going. They feel so contented there that they just enjoy it. So Nibbana is not a place. Nibbana is not even a mental state. And when a person reached the fourth stage of enlightenment, and that person has done his pre-Nibbana, which means pass away completely, he doesn't exist anywhere. So in many books I read that some people are saying that even after that an arhant enjoys that and stays in a blissful state forever. Do you know why they say that? They still are attached to that blissful state. They still want to go on living, which I can understand very well. It's not difficult to understand. But still you can see that there is attachment still there to go on living. They even say that even the Buddha is still existing somehow, somewhere. Maybe in the Himalayas. No. So these things are very important to understand as a knowledge even, because so much misconceptions, wrong ideas floating around. So no matter how blissful, no matter how pure a person is, still Buddha said that is not a liberation. So it's not an abode, not a state. The nature of Nibbana is totally opposite of the nature of mental and physical phenomena. So this is also important. Some people say that Nibbana and Sansara are the same. No. Very clear no. But to understand Nibbana, you have to understand Sansara. You have to understand. Sansara means physical and mental process. This is called Sansara, not a story actually. The real Sansara means, the real going round and round means, this mental and physical process going on and on and on. This is called Sansara. And the end of it is Nibbana. So you can still say that Nibbana is related to Sansara. Nibbana is somehow related to mental and physical process. But Nibbana is not in the process. It is just out of the process, just on the edge of the process. So that much you can say that it is related to mental and physical process. That's why Buddha said, I claim Nibbana in this body. Which doesn't mean that there is Nibbana inside us. Which means that by understanding this body completely, by understanding this five aggregate, this mental and physical process completely, we can reach Nibbana. There's no other way to reach Nibbana. So, I have to make things very short and compact because not enough time to go through all these things. Very interesting. If you are interested, I'm really willing to come back again. I will come back again and go through the whole thing in very, very detail. I want to know how many people want to know that. Twice a week for 3 months? 8 times a month, so that means 24 times, 24 meetings. If you want to do that, I'm willing to help. There are very interesting things there, very deep and meaningful things there. It's a mine of gem, big mine. Well, when I'm alone and thinking and reading and sometimes just trying to tune my mind into some kind of state, I have so much to talk. I want to talk about these things, let people know. Why? Because so much wrong ideas floating around. I want to clear that, no, this is true, this is not true. This is what the Buddha taught, this is not what the Buddha taught. Somebody is making up. So when this enlightenment state eradicates some sort of defilements, eradicates Metta Ditti and many others, Ditti Vicikesa and many others, greed, pride, all that. When we say that this enlightenment state eradicates those defilements, what do we mean? Can we eradicate those defilements which happened before? Defilements, I mean. We cannot, because it has happened already. Because it's in the past. Can we eradicate those defilements happening now? We can think that it can be possible, yes. But do you think that it will stay if we don't eradicate that? Whatever happens, like say you get angry now, what can you do about it? And anger, moment to moment, one mental state is one anger actually. And because it goes on very fast, we think like a big anger. There's no such thing as big anger. Small angers put together. high energy anger. When it happens, in this brief moment, it will go away by itself. It will never stay. You cannot say, anger, stay. It will go away. You don't need to eradicate that anger which is happening now. Let's say a sound is the same as anger. Any natural process is the same in the sense that it arises and passes away. So, it's gone. You don't need to destroy that, eradicate that sound. It will go away. So when we say that this enlightenment state eradicates these defilements, it doesn't mean that it eradicates the present defilements which is happening now. So does that mean that it eradicates the defilements in the future? You don't know what defilements will happen when in the future, because it has not happened. So we cannot eradicate which has not happened. Which means that that enlightenment state does not eradicate the past defilements, it does not eradicate the present defilement, it does not eradicate the future defilement. Got confused? It eradicates the potential. Understand that? Very clear. It eradicates the potential. Yes, the potential is there to arise, but it has not arisen yet. And if you eradicate the potential, it won't arise. Yes, please, questions. This is very important. Impact means it has potential. The defilements in the past has potential, but it is not there as a thing. Because of the past defilements, because of the past karma, we are here now. And this karma that we have somehow carrying, in what form are we carrying that karma? In what form are we carrying the defilements? As a potential only. This is something very subtle to understand. Only potential. Not real. It has not manifested. Think of a seed as a potential. The seed has the potential to become a big tree. So if you want to eradicate the tree, in the past a tree has died, so you don't have to eradicate. And in the present, say if a tree is dying, just let it die. But in the future, it has not become a tree. If you want to destroy, just destroy the seed. You don't have to destroy the tree, you just destroy the seed. So it's like a seed, a potential. Can you definitely say that, like say now it's 12 minutes past 5, so to speak. Exactly an hour later, what kind of defilements will arise in your mind? Nobody can tell. Because it's not definitely sure. But there's the potential for anything to arise. Anything to arise. If you can destroy that potential, finish. But this potential is not in the past. And you cannot say that this potential is the present because it has not manifested. So this potential is something very hard to understand. It can manifest. So there's only the possibility, the potential. So that's why because the kilesa, the defilements, which the enlightenment state eradicates, and because of that we call that as a nibbanic state, we cannot say that nibbana is the past or the present or the future. Nibbana is timeless. It's beyond time. It's not in the domain of time. It's very confusing. It's very hard to talk about. Maybe some subatomic physicists can understand it. The potential is very difficult to understand. The karma also is a potential. Whatever karma, so when we reach to a certain state of enlightenment, certain karma cannot give result anymore. Our bad karma, so to speak, our bad karma that we have accumulated, after a certain stage of enlightenment, after every stage of enlightenment, a lot of those karmas will not give result anymore. And where is that karma? How are we carrying that karma? We are carrying that as a potential. Well, if you don't understand it right away, it's not your fault. It's very hard to understand. Yes, please. Right. Yes.
And that's how I understand nirvana. You have a spirit mind, you have a soul mind, so the soul mind equates to the conscious mind, but the higher mind equates to the eternal mind. So what's in the eternal? What effect has the conscious or time on the eternal? There is
Very hard to talk about these things. Just take your time. Take your time and try to understand it. Let's say we have potential to get angry, but we are not angry now. But anybody can push our button and make us angry. Say something and we get angry. But we cannot tell when this person will get angry. We are eradicating the potential for this defilement to manifest. We are eradicating the seed of the manifestation of defilement. It's okay. Take your time. This is not something you can understand in 1 minute.
When you reach that state, no matter what, no matter how people are educated,
you won't get angry. So that's why it's not the past defilement, it's not the present defilement, it's not the future defilement, it's the potential which has been eradicated. Even very learned monks sometimes couldn't understand it. It takes a long time to understand. Yes, it's beyond thought. So in order to understand, the best way is to practice. Yes, that's why Buddha said, attakavacharo, it's unthinkable, which means you cannot understand it just by thinking. Nibbana is not something that arises. Nibbana is not something that happens. So we cannot say when nibbana happens. Nibbana is a reality which a person who has developed enough wisdom can experience. Depending on his clarity of wisdom. The more clear your wisdom becomes, the more clearly you experience it. That's why in the first stage of enlightenment, the experience of Nibbana is not the same as second, third, fourth stage. But the nature of Nibbana is the same, but because of the purity of wisdom, you experience it differently. Like seeing. The more clear your eye becomes, the more clearly you see. Like a person has eye operation, who has been blind, and the doctor makes an eye operation, and he opens his eyes, he can see light, but he cannot see clearly. It takes a long time. Slowly and slowly the person sees more and more clearly, more and more clearly, more light, more color. So it's like that. Very hard to even find a simile. That's why in some way Buddha said that there is no example for Nibbana. No word for Nibbana even, although we are using the word Nibbana. No word for Nibbana means no word can explain Nibbana. No language, no concept can really, really, really explain what it is. Actually, Nibbana means quenching. In the Ratana Sutta, Nibbanti Dhirayatayam Padipo, like a flame which is gone out. So, Nirvana also, another meaning, means no craving. No striving, no craving anymore. That will take another class to explain. But I think generally I have explained the process now, the process of meditation, and this is our last class. The next Saturday we will have a meeting for those who are coming to the retreat, and we will discuss about many things, anything you want to discuss. It's an open discussion, open meeting. How can all of us together cooperate and make it the best that it could be? And also, getting to know each other, because this is very important. If you feel that you know everybody, you feel more relaxed. If you feel that you are among strangers, you feel very tense. So I want to make it, the atmosphere, very relaxed and friendly. So next meeting will be a kind of friendly gathering. Get to know each other. Who are you? And ask any question. There's no end actually. But we have to stop somewhere. So if you have any more questions now, please. I'm sure there will be many more questions, but very difficult to answer some of the questions. Anyway, I'll try. Ask me. Yes, ma'am?
What is maybe father or wife that the document type of the Pakistan doesn't like them?
They don't have the word for it, but they have the experience. So Buddha gave a Dhamma Dasa Sutta, the Mirror Sutta. Buddha said that a Sotamapanna has these qualities. He has confidence in Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. He will never break a precept. And if you feel that that you have these qualities, you can tell yourself, I am a Sotapanna. But if you don't know, if you don't have this knowledge, book knowledge, or if you have not heard about it, although you have the experience, you don't know how to call it. But you have all those qualities and experience. So to have the experience, to have those qualities, doesn't necessarily mean that you know what it is. Like say, if I give you something to eat, I tell you to close your eyes, and I'll give you something which you have never tasted before. And I'll tell you to open your mouth and put it in your mouth, and you chew it. You can tell the taste. I can ask you, how does this taste like? You can say, oh, it tastes a little bit sweet, and it has a little bit sour taste also, and it tastes good. And if I ask you, what is it? You will say, I don't know, but I know the taste. I don't know the name. So you know the taste, but you don't know the name for it. Which is quite natural, actually. A sotapanna, which is a word for some experience. You know the qualities.
You know the qualities that you might not be 100% sure
that you do. If you want to be 100% sure, I'll quote Lali Siaro again. Just wait long enough. For a few years even. Because you'll be tested in the world. You will be tested in your daily life. If you can, even though you cannot exactly say right now, you meditate and something you experience, oh, maybe I've attained the first stage of enlightenment. Don't be in a hurry to make the decision. Just wait long enough. You'll be tested and you'll find out, oh no, I still have to meditate. Right, that's arrogant, yes. Adimana, in Pali it is called Adimana. Still there, yes. That is also called Mecha Vimoti. You are not liberated, but you think you are liberated, which is wrong. But anybody can make that mistake. If anybody make that mistake, we don't blame that person. But if that person is honest, he or she will know later. Because in the world, so many people and so many situations pushing your buttons all the time, and you react. If you're honest, you know. But if you're dishonest, nobody can tell you. But if you're really honest, you can really tell. Like cheating, very subtle. Telling lies, very, very subtle. Any more questions? Yes?
Writing and passing away in
Different people experience different khandhas more. So not everybody experience the same thing. Some people experience vedana more, or as in passing away. Some people experience citta, as in passing away more. It depends on personality too. I emphasize sensation more because for a beginner, that's where we begin. Sensations. Anything you experience in your body is a sensation. And in the mind, you have emotions. I emphasize more on emotion, sensation, because for the beginners, that's where they begin. A beginner, it's very difficult to begin from thoughts, mental states. Later, it depends on your personality. Even though you begin from kaya nupasana, bodily movement and sensations, or vedana nupasana, if you do that long enough, it goes toward where you are more inclined to go. It happens naturally.
Yes?
In the body, we feel sukha vedana, dukkha vedana, and upakha vedana also, pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. In our mind, we feel emotions, pleasant emotions, unpleasant emotions. And sometimes the two are related. When you feel painful pain in your body, you feel unpleasant emotion in your mind, you feel so much anguish. Oh no, this is so painful. So they are related. Not always necessarily, because if you are a good meditator, and not to say about arahants, even though their body is in pain, the mind is perfectly peaceful. So it depends on how you have trained your mind. It's a very good question. Yes? Uprooting of greed and hatred happens in the third stage of enlightenment. Uprooting of greed for worldly pleasure, but still greed for blissful life is still there. So greed for sensual pleasure is eradicated by the third stage of enlightenment, and anger or frustration, all totally eradicated by the third stage of enlightenment. In the beginning of our practice, we cannot eradicate that. When it happens, we pay attention. We look at it very closely and deeply. And by paying close attention, they become weaker and weaker. And then sometimes they don't arise. Then the mind becomes very clear and peaceful. We can pay attention to more neutral sensations and feelings. But when there's strong desire and strong anger, it's important to watch them, but when they are very, very strong, we are not very clear anymore. But although we can still pay attention, real good insight happens when they are not there anymore. Well, when they are temporarily, at least, not happening. That's why in the tenth stage of insight, there's total equanimity. No greed, no desire, no frustration, no agitation. The mind becomes very pure. Then breakthrough. So before this breakthrough enlightenment, this is necessary, yes. But in the beginning of our practice, it can come again and again. We have to go through. Even frustration about meditation. Even attachment to our peaceful state of meditation. We have to overcome, give up, let go. That's why it's very important to wash these things and let go. Whenever we have anger, we can see that because of some kind of expectation, some kind of attachment, some kind of desire, we are upset. We can see both. Whenever one is there, another is there. When we want something, there's an anxiety or fear that whether we will get it or not. Very painful. Actually, desire itself is pain. Incompleteness. Whenever we desire for something, we feel incomplete. And this incompleteness is pain. So what you have asked is very important too, because in the tenth state of insight, nothing like that happens. No desire, no anger, no frustration. Totally clear and balanced. We will discuss about these things again next Saturday. We'll have a meeting, and it can last for a long, long time, as long as you want. As long as you want. Many, many hours. Just prepare for that next Saturday. No limit. You may ask any amount of question, any kind of question. So write down your questions when it comes into your mind. Yes, this is important. Sometimes you have a question and you forget about it. Write down your questions. Get a clear answer. Because I tell you again and again, during the retreat, I may not have time to explain everything. I will only tell you what to do. That's all. Do this. I will not explain why. No time to explain why. Just tell you to do what to do. But you may still want to understand why. So before retreat, we will discuss about all these things and clear all that. So that we will be really ready to meditate. If this is the way I work, when I want to do something, I prepare and prepare and prepare. And preparation, if you have done preparation, you have done half of your work already. Well prepared is half done. So, come prepared. Sit now. Prepare your body also. If you have not, if you are not sitting now, then in the retreat to sit 1 hour, not easy. Your mind will get agitated. But if you sit now, every day, as much as possible, then you prepare also your mind, your muscles, your nerves even need to prepare. You can't expect them just to happen when you like it. Prepare your nerves, your muscles. Even a runner has to prepare the muscles, the nerves, the energy. So meditate now, every day. This is a very, actually a very exciting experience. It's very important. This is not something you do quite often. And only going to last for 9 days. If you are willing to do that for 100 days, come unprepared, it's okay. Come. No need to prepare, come over. Anybody can come and just sit and ask any question. But you are going to do that only for 9 days. Even 9 days minus 3 hours. Maybe 4 hours. In Burma, in many other countries, people go for a retreat for 100 days. 100-day retreat. Many people do that. So then you have time. Now we have this 9 precious days. I don't want to waste a minute. So I'm trying to make it as best as it could. So, but I need all of you to participate in that. So that we won't waste any moment. A retreat, somebody said, a retreat is a treat. It's something very special. I do hope you will experience something. Something very precious. The time doesn't really matter actually. In a few days, some people can experience something very deep and meaningful. In 3-4 days, some people can do that. If you're well prepared, if you have been meditating and attending the classes, so more questions next week. Everybody please come. All those who are coming for the retreat. So now we will conclude our class here. So let's pay honor to the Buddha who is really worthy of honor. I honor the Buddha by the very practice which leads to liberation. I honor the Dharma by the very practice which leads to liberation. I honor the Sangha by the very practice which leads to liberation.